Ladies and gentlemen, a week. Ladies and gentlemen, a week's gone by, a lot's gone on, which means it's time to tune in and listen to the ramblings of a diehard sports fan with Eli Gray.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beans, guacamole, cheese, sour cream, and if there's any room left, a few shreds of lettuce.
I don't see no lettuce.
A culinary creation that baffles the human mind. A 12,000 calorie salad.
Ah, caramba.
Some may ask, is your taco salad healthy? Of course it is. It's a salad, isn't it?
You can eat that deep fried crunchy bowl.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, conquistador of the calorie. You put the feast in fiesta.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine. Because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hello?
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most. Idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Sultan of the Shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Golf Cinnamon Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
Four finishes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hamblor, the god of hamburgers, set out to create the ultimate burger with all the flavors of a steakhouse. 100% black Angus beef, crispy onion strings, A1 steak sauce, and crumbled blue cheese. It was glorious. The new Steakhouse $6 Burger from Carl's Jr.
Tastes like it's made by the god of hamburgers, and that's just the way it is.
Good afternoon, or good evening, guys. This is Roger. I can't hear you. I know I've been taken off mute, and I'm not hearing anything. Okay, I just heard something. Hi.
Oh, okay. There. Sorry about that. I hope this hasn't
no
been the
problem.
Case.
No. I wasn't able to hear you there, Eli, but I hear you now. How you doing?
I am doing grand. You know, that Game 7 gave me a little pause for a minute, a great series, but now, you know, it's on to the next tomorrow night. And
it was a big deal there, Eli. Congratulations. The Heat, I mean, talk about a hard-fought series. Look, I kind of expected the Heat to maybe take it in 5 or 6, but props to Indiana that they made it a series, but the champs were able to put it away. Congratulations to your team, and this is going to be a hell of a series, Eli.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great, especially with the format of 2-3-2 makes it even more interesting come the finals, where you've got two at home, and even, you know, taking both of them doesn't necessarily give you home court because you got to go on the road for three. And the one thing I like, though, is that the Spurs are coming off that week and a half rest, so that should be a nice advantage for the Heat.
Yeah, funny you'd say that. I think we've learned over the years, right, the teams that generally sit a little bit, They get screwed in game one.
Yeah, I mean, you had that with Miami in round two and three. You know, coming off of the week plus rest after the sweeping the Bucks, they came out sloppy against the Bulls, and they lost to the Bulls, going on to win the four after that, but as well as even against Indiana, where you had that rest, and you know, they came out looking sloppy, even though they got the win.
Yeah, hey, Eli, I know you probably already talked about this at the start of the program, but, you know, since I'm here right now, tell me about it. I don't know. How's the man? How's Dwayne? What's up with him? I understand he was hurt, or tell me, what's going on, Eli? I need to know.
The basic impression is he has a knee injury. To what extent, no one's exactly sure, but he is playing through an injury. But he wasn't just a non-factor in the last series up until Game 7. In Game 1 through 6, Dwayne Wade was not just a non-factor. He was a liability. And thankfully, he showed up for Game 7 and played and helped the team out, because otherwise, it'd be a very worrisome piece. Hopefully, we see the Game 7 Dwayne Wade in the finals as opposed to Game 1 through 6. But he was just awful in those first six games, no effort. In Game 7, he put forth effort and really helped the team, but in those first six games, you're 100% right. It was something really to worry about.
Wow. Yeah. Look, Eli, I'm not a fan of Miami, but I acknowledge how good they are, and I know what they're doing. I just don't like the attitude, but you know what? Who cares? You know what? That's just the way it is. But looking at Miami, I still see them as dangerous, and just thinking of it, if Dwayne Wade is healthy, oh man, it's not going to be.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about this attitude. Yeah, I get from an outside observer where it comes from, but let's put it into perspective. The decision was, by all definitions of it, an awful decision on LeBron's part to do it that way. He's apologized many times before. You've had players who are been under less scrutiny for doing far worse. I really don't get what the big issue with it now was. Yes, it was a bad decision. He's apologized many times for it. You've had players who have done far worse. Carmelo Anthony spent a year almost with the Denver Nuggets, where he put that team completely under the bus every day, just talking about it in his interviews about how he wanted out of Denver. Yet people give him a ride for that. You had Kobe, who gave issues with the Lakers, always demanding trades unless they put great pieces around him, and still not coming through in certain years. And Lakers fans, I'm going to call out one of my Facebook fans, you know, delusion, revisionist history on the part of this one guy, because he said the Lakers dominated every year in the playoffs. Kobe and Shaq are so much better than Miami was. Well, let's call a spade a spade. Miami, in their first year playing together, went to the finals and went six games with a very good Dallas team. People jump with joy that Dallas beat Miami in that first year that they're there together. But let's remember, that year Dallas played together for a number of years before that. Miami was in their first year, and yet it still went six games in that round. Dallas was a great team. I'm not taking anything away from them. They deserve to win that. So, you know, knocking Miami for that is a little bit short-sighted. Miami right now is going to be their third year in a row going to the finals. That's something that, you know, knock it all you want, that's something to be said. You know, 3 years in a row going to the finals. The Lakers, you know, while people say they dominated in the playoffs, in that first year they went 3-0, 4-0, 4-0, 4-1. Yes, the first year they did dominate, but after that they became very mediocre, even while winning the finals. A lot of their series went deep. Kobe's record and stats versus LeBron come playoff time isn't even comparison. I mean, 25.4 versus 27.6 for Kobe versus LeBron. LeBron with the 27.6. LeBron has almost two more assists per game, which means he's involved in more points. He's got almost two more rebounds per play. He's involved in more points. Steals are about the same. Blocks are about the same. Field goal percentage. I mean, it's just having people who are Lakers fans tell me how much more dominant the Lakers were. The Lakers were a great team. I'm not saying anything other than that, but let's call a spade a spade. This Miami team is a great team as well, and if you say otherwise and compare them to the Lakers and say the Lakers were romping through the playoffs, it's a revisionist history at its best that does not pull through when you actually look at the facts of the matter.
I like that, revisionist history. Eli, you know what? If people give you lip about the attitude of your team, just tell them, hey, look, haters, we're right here. I don't know where your team is, but we're right here. Look at what happened the first year. We went there to game six. We won the next year. And guess what? We're here again. Deal with it. I don't think you have to give any excuses, Eli.
Oh, no, I don't. But that's what makes for part of the great talk and the interesting, you know, thing with the playoffs, the finals. Let's also call out the NBA stretching out these playoffs and finals. While I get it for the, you know, network ratings and viewership and stuff like that, as a fan, this is just torturous. The amount of time they stretch these playoffs out. You're talking another 2.5 weeks till the two plus weeks till the finals is over. Almost 2 months coming into the finals. It's just ridiculous. I mean, the NHL has completed their entire playoffs plus Stanley Cup in almost a less amount of time, even before the finals have concluded.
Yeah, you know, Eli, I think everyone listening to you right now, myself included, no one's going to argue that. It's a freaking travesty what they're doing. I remember when it meant something to play a game, have an off day, and then play again, and when were you going to travel, when were you going to be at home. I remember that, Eli, when it meant something. And now it's just, it really feels like a game is every week. And sorry to say, but that sucks, man. They should be every other day like they used to be.
Yeah, and the funny part is you ask the players themselves. The players don't want this format. The players want to be playing every other day. The league is almost forcing it down their throat. And with that, we'll talk about another thing that a lot of people are saying the league does, which I completely disagree. Not completely. I'll give you my take on what I think that as far as this conspiracy theory stuff about the league fixing games and whatnot. Let us take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. Me and Roger on the next segment discussing some more NBA stuff.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging. Knees bending, head bobbing, to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're
so crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most. Idle chit-chat 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Sultan of the Shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Golf Cinnamon Quiet Sign on the road.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Alrighty, we are back. Thank you all for joining us on this week's edition of the Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan. I'm Eli Gray. We'll be leading it. We got Roger on with us also. The call-in number to join in the discussion, 347-637-2306. Once again, 347-637-2306. And Roger, as we were discussing in the commercial break, this series with Miami and the Spurs, you say you being an L.A. fan, you know, as an NBA fan, this is a great matchup. You've got two coaches, Greg Popovich, going to go down as one of the all-time greats as coaching-wise, but also people don't give enough credit to Eric Spoelstra, who 3 years ago took a pretty mediocre team to the playoffs, you know, even though you had Dwayne Wade, granted, but he took players that otherwise weren't known, and they brought him to the playoffs. People don't give Spoelstra the credit. And though I think in hindsight people will, I'll have Phil Jackson, you know, even though he didn't win Coaches of the Year either, but he always had great players to coach also. Part of being a great coach is managing the personalities, and Spoelstra definitely does that. You saw the coaching adjustments in last round also, where he had to go up and manage and coach against, out-coach almost, Frank Vogel. Granted, the talent level on both the teams was a little different, but it was a great coaching, you know, chess match almost between Spoelstra and Vogel, and we all know, you know, that ended out Miami 1-7. And being on the West Coast, an LA fan, you get to see the Spurs more. Let's hear your take on this series of Miami versus the Spurs starting tomorrow night in Miami.
I appreciate that, Eli. Right now, look, again, and I'm sorry to repeat it, as an NBA fan who is able to watch this, guys, how long has it been since we've had two teams that are like this? They've got history and they got the power. These guys are at their best right now, both teams. They're both dangerous. And when you look at it, there's 5 men on the court. No, they're not 5 men. There's actually 6 men on the court. And you were alluding to that, Eli, is with Spoelstra. Well, we also know the other guy, which is with San Antonio. Probably, yeah, probably the best coach in a long, long time. So this is really going to be a 6-player game on both sides. And right now, guys, for those of you that know and don't know, I had a chance to call one of the games, and I was really impressed with Miami when they were playing against Chicago. And I think we were watching Game 3. And I was really impressed on how Chicago was able to keep Miami out on the perimeter for basically the first half. But Miami lived on the perimeter, and they were hitting their shots. And when they were finally able to get in, Miami took it to the basket in the second half and just finally took it to Chicago. What's going to happen is with San Antonio can play better defense, and they can also hit from the outside. So I don't know about you, Eli. I think these teams are even matched. I'm not saying on paper. I'm saying when it comes to players, you look at them, each team has a clear advantage. But these are teams that can drive, and these are teams that can live on the perimeter, and these are teams that can play defense. I think it's going to be a bruising series.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a great series. And let's go on the record now officially. Miami will not dominate in any way, shape, or form. And if they do, it'd be unexpected, and I'd be ecstatic as a Heat fan, obviously. But as an outside observer, I do not expect it at all. I think Miami is a more dynamic and versatile team as far as they could switch on the fly as to what they're going to do. You could become a pounded in low, you know, with LeBron and you know, try to have Anderson, you know, rule the boards and Wade with that effort, or go small and go out low and stuff like that. But I don't think that it's going to be a run on any team. I don't think the Spurs will run away with it in any way, shape, or form. I don't think the Heat will run away. It's going to be a grinded out series. Miami, I my gut tells me Miami in six. It would not shock me in the slightest if it goes seven like it did last round, with it being a pound out series, because you've got two coaches that could adjust on the fly. In, you know, the Spurs have generally been this year a very good team on the pick and roll, using their size. Miami could adjust off of that. Miami, like we said, it's really going to come down to whether their bench players, and really, you know, it's not even bench players, but players that for most of their teams would be key players, are hitting their outside shots. Ray Allen, Shane Battier, Mike Miller, depending on how Spoelstra tends to go. Mario Chalmers is going to be a crucial key in this series. He came up huge for Miami in last series with Bosch and Wade essentially being non-factors. If Chalmers does not have the series that he had last series, Miami will lose to a very good Spurs team. They need Chalmers going on the way that he is. You need LeBron to be LeBron, which no one, I think, thinks that it'll be any different. LeBron will have his points. The question is, can the rest of the team come together and put up what they did? There were games last series where Miami exploded. They had great dynamics off of the bench. You had Haslam nailing shots. Anderson has barely missed this entire playoff run. You need Anderson to play crucial role minutes, especially against a bigger team in San Antonio. They're not as physical per se as the Pacers were, but they still are a bigger, more versatile team as far as when it comes to the boards. So you're going to need Birdman Anderson to come up big with the energy and the rebounds. Haslam's going to have to get into it. LeBron's going to have to play big down low like he did in Game 5 against the Pacers. It's going to be a question of which a team adjusts quicker and better against the other team, because you have two teams that have their own individual unique talent sets that one overrules the other, and it's a question of which team could exploit and run away with and outsmart almost the other team and play their game better than the other team can play their, you know, strength before the other team adjusts to it. So that's really, you know, I'm really looking, it's going to be a great series. It might not be the showy, flashy series that some NBA fans are looking forward to, but it's going to be a great, pure basketball series for what the NBA is today.
Yeah, you know, Eli, let me take that last sentence that you just gave everyone in the chat room, or that you gave everyone that's listening to this. Look, I am a casual NBA fan. I'm a hardcore baseball fan. I love basketball. I love football. I'm paying attention to hockey. But if the fans are not looking at this series, I don't know what their problem is. I even question, Eli, if they even are fans. This is obviously the big game. This is the championship. But, Eli, how could I know it is hard, but pretend you're not a Miami fan, seriously, for a moment, and think about this. These are two damn good teams, dude. I mean, this is what you want to see. This is what it's going to go. I'm not even going to go out on a limb. I'm not smart enough to even try to say who's going to win it in you know, five or six or seven. I'm not, because I'm going to be put to shame either way. But I like what I'm seeing here. This is going to be an exciting one. And NBA fans, if you ain't watching, you guys must be dead, because this is the stuff that we live for. And I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to it. I could probably just prattle on and on and on. I will say this, Eli. I think both teams are so good that each team is going to have a blowout. I know that probably hurts you as a Miami fan, but I'm thinking San Antonio is going to have their way with them in one game, just like Miami is going to have their way with San Antonio in one game. Mark my words, it's going to happen that there's going to be a blowout, but it's just going to make this series that much more interesting.
Yeah, no, you're right. I agree with you that there is a good chance that one team will blow out each other. You know, both teams will blow out each other in at least two of the games. But here's the thing, let's shift a little bit, in that if Miami goes six or seven games in this round and loses in six or seven games, contrary to what everyone is going to say, it is not a failure of a season. You played good teams in the playoffs in the first round. Milwaukee's not a good team. Let's knock that out. Milwaukee in a league that had parity, true parity, and you weren't breaking it down into East and West, Milwaukee would not have made the playoffs. So Miami got a coast in the first round. They got a pass, and they took care of it exactly the way that you would think. Four games, that was it. Chicago, while not full strength, still was somewhat of a challenge, and Miami faltered against them in Game 1. They fell to them after the rest. Whatever the reason was, Miami fell Game 1 but took care of them. So Miami showed, and it was a dominant performance in those other four games. Even Game 1 was close till the end. Then against the Pacers are a very good team. Anyone who tells you otherwise is just denying the reality. You've got Roy Hibbert, who's the best center in the East, by far, without a doubt, the last true remaining center in the East, possibly even in the West, depending how you compare him with the Gasol brothers and maybe Dwight Howard at his heyday, but not today. But the way that you compare them right now, Roy Hibbert is the last remaining true center in the East. You've got a rising star in George David West at the power forward. You've got a very good team in Indiana, and Miami beat them. It took seven games, granted, but in the games that Miami won, they dominated. The other games, Miami kept it close except for Game 6, and they lost. So, yes. But if Miami loses in four and gets swept, that will be a disappointment and a failure of a season. Five games, I could argue with you that it wasn't, but I could definitely hear that it was. Six or seven games, even if the Heat lose, it is not a disappointment of the season, because let's remember, the Spurs are a very deep team, a very good team. They went neck and neck with the Thunder during the regular season for the best record. They've got the best coach in the NBA right now in Greg Popovich, a no-nonsense guy who could adjust on the fly and make use of his players in the best way possible. Yes, some of their players are towards the tail end of their career in Tim Duncan and Parker and Ginobili. They are winding down. They're still very good players, but they are winding down. But if Miami loses in six or seven, I'll not consider it a failure. As a Heat fan, obviously my gut is telling me Miami will win in six or seven, but it would not shock me if it goes the other way. So this is, as an NBA fan, a great matchup. Two teams that have different talent sets that each make each other great, and each one of them could beat each other, like you said, in all likelihood, one of each team will blow out the other. It's just going to be a question of which team can outlast the other and make the adjustments in the right way, you know, in the ways possible.
I appreciate that, Eli. And I agree, dude, there's a lot to love on this. I don't know if you noticed, but we do have a caller. They are on hold. I want to remind the callers that if you do want in, just press 1 on your keypad and we'll gladly take your call. Or you want to just screw with them, Eli? You want to take the call?
I know who that is. That is family down in Miami.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, you see that we really would have been screwing with them. Okay. All right. Well, good stuff. Like I said, I came in late to the program. I'm not sure what else you were talking about earlier, Eli. We do have a few more minutes. What else did you want to talk about? Or do you want to keep talking about the finals?
We can do finals, or we could switch over just for a few minutes. But we can talk about, you know, MLB, obviously, the horrendous way that my Marlins are playing. I haven't been paying as close attention as I should be. You know, let's talk about it. The Marlins, everyone knew they would be bad this year, and add to the fact that how bad they are, they were just riddled by injuries, so not as bad. But let's talk a little bit about this upcoming steroids issue that it looks like every indication points to Bud Selig and the MLB suspending players from this Miami fiasco. Big names, not just small names, but a few big names in Ryan Braun, Everett Cabrera, Melky Cabrera, Francisco Cervelli, Bartolo Colon, Nelson Cruz, Gio Gonzalez, Yasmani Grandel, Montero, and the big name, obviously the biggest of those big names, A-Rod. It looks like they're going to suspend him for this, you know, implications in the Miami steroids issue. What's your take on this whole thing?
Well, if I may add something, I found out, and I've been reading that apparently Gio Gonzalez, the stuff that he purchased, it was legal, whatever it was. And I think all parties have said, yeah, you know what, Gio just happened to go there. We know what he purchased. They have the receipt. So I don't think he's really going to be involved. And something came out today that Cano apparently also is not going to be involved as well. So everyone else is involved big time. And I think that baseball is going to move forward on the suspensions because, you know, they're saying, well, you lied to us, that's 50 games. And because you took the shot, that's another 50 games. But Tim Kurkjian on ESPN was talking about, well, to be suspended 50 games or something like that, there has to be a positive test. So I don't know, Eli. It's going to be rather entertaining over the next few weeks. And remember, the whole appeals process, if it's barely starting with the interviews, this might not be done until, the dog days of August, maybe.
Because yeah,
remember,
you
Melky
know what?
Cabrera, yeah, remember, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Melky Cabrera tested positive before the All-Star game. And when all the appeals things went out, you know, they ran their course. When did it happen? It was late in the season. So go ahead, Eli.
Yeah, you know, it's at the point where this is just becoming almost a joke. You know, MLB, just let it go. You know, some players juiced and were juicing. It'd be hard-pressed to say that players still are. You know, this whole implication of Miami. Let it play out on the sides unless they have really conclusive evidence that they can go right away and get these players implicated with a very fast process as far as appeals. I would say just let it go. You've got so many big names. It's becoming, like you said, it's more of a fiasco, and the amount of time that it would take, you're really wrecking the entire season for other teams and the MLB as a whole. Just let it go. I mean, come on. It's almost time to stop being such a bounty hunter when it comes to the steroids thing. We get it. There was a steroid error. Some players might be doing things. Some players might not. But when you're putting yourself in these situations where every season comes under scrutiny of steroids, you're bringing it on yourself when you're vehemently going against players. Just let it be. I'd say 95%, if not more, percent of players are not juicing anymore just because of the dynamic of how the league is going. You know, players also that you're looking at their stats that aren't. Steroids does not make a minor leaguer into an all-star. It takes a player who is very good and makes him a little bit better or that much better. Let's get over it. Let's put this in the past. You are perpetuating the steroid error by keeping doing these kind of things, and I think it is a little ridiculous. And to cut you off, and let's go quickly. We'll go take a quick commercial break. We got a caller on the other end of this, and after that, we will wrap up. Thank you all for listening. Once again, the call number, 347-637-2306. We'll be right back. Back, it's Eli, it's Roger on the other end, and we have our first caller of the show in the 305. How are you doing? Hello.
Doing well. How are you?
I am good. What do you want to talk about?
The Miami Heat.
Okay, what you got to say?
See, I just think that the Spurs are just too good defensively for the Miami Heat. What I'm saying is like this: is that they're much better in size with Tim Duncan and Tiago Splitter and DR coming off the bench. It's going to be a little bit of a problem for Bosch, Haslam, Birdman. They're not as big in size, relatively.
Yeah, I would agree with them. The Spurs are a better overall team as far as size-wise and on the boards go. It's just a question of whether Miami could open it up with their outside shooting and LeBron playing down low, that there's enough of a different skill set. And I said this before, it's two different skill sets almost. San Antonio is a more traditional team as far as banging it down low, rolling off the pick and rolls, a traditional team that has the advantage in those traditional manners, whereas Miami is going to need to be on the flip side, the hybrid team that they've been in the past 2 years of a run-and-gun team that spreads the court, pops the threes, relies on their bench players to hit the threes, and Ray Allen, Battier, Miller, even Chalmers, the starting point guard, obviously. They're going to need to use their skill set to their best advantage because in a traditional manner, the Spurs definitely are the better team in size-wise and traditional pick-and-roll, as you mentioned.
But Ray Allen and Chalmers and Battier are all shooting significantly worse than in the postseason than they did in the regular season.
That's correct. And as I said, it's going to come down to whether they could come out of that funk. It looked like in Game 7 they kind of burst out of it. Mike Miller played good minutes. He didn't hit the shots, but you're going to need, as you said, and you're 100% right, you're going to need them to play differently than they did in the first round and not play as bad. If Miami could get those players out of their funk, LeBron can play the inside game that we saw in Game 5, and Burman could bring the energy that he did, even though he was suspended one game. Haslam hitting the shot. Chalmers playing the role that he did, sometimes splitting it up in the middle, hanging out down for the three-pointer. Miami has the skill set overall. It's not traditional, but they are the better team when all that they want to do is clicking, in that the field is being spread, they're running the pick and roll, they're getting the three-point shots, and they're getting some of the boards, they are the better team than the Spurs when the Spurs are clicking the best. And as Roger pointed out earlier, you got to assume that in one game for each of the teams, they are going to be able to far outplay that other dynamic that the other team is bringing and blow out a team. But that's going to be the great part of this NBA Finals, is that it's going to be the switching of dynamics almost quarter by quarter, if not possession by possession at times, where the Spurs play their traditional set and Miami's trying to counter it with their hybrid non-traditional set in the players that they have. And thank you again for calling. We appreciate it. We got to wrap up right now. And let's just quickly wrap up the series. As I've said over a few times, it's completely different skill sets that the two teams are bringing. I agree with you that one team will probably want to run away with one of the games. I think Miami takes it in six, at best case scenario, seven. If it plays out in the way that we say, that's my prediction, is Miami in six as a Heat fan, seven as a basketball fan. What do you have to say? And just wrap it up quickly, as we only have about 30 seconds left.
That's me, right, Eli? I'm sorry.
That is you.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, I thought it was with the caller. Look, we only have a few seconds left, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to answer it, Eli. I may have already said it already. Dude.
Okay,
awesome.
That's great.
Eli, I'm worried about Dwayne Wade.
All right. Well, hopefully Wade gets his act together like he did in Game 7. Game 1 tomorrow night. Thanks for joining Rambling as a Sports Fan. See you next week. Peace out. Roger, thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next week. Peace.
All right, we'll see you.